Welcome to Exploring Neurodiversity. Today's episode is Implementing Inclusivity. This is a co-produced FE News and Cognosys podcast mini-series called Exploring Neurodiversity. This episode is all around implementing inclusivity. My name is Gavin O'Mara. I'm the CEO and founder of FE News. My co-host is Louise Kowalski. She's head of science at Cognosys. Louise, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Gavin. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's our last of the series of this series so far. And this is a really, really important one. It's all around practical ways that we can actually showcase best practice, but to encourage inclusivity to learners, to onboard teams and learners, to help leaders better take this forward. So it's really, really, really important. Got two guests today. We've got Charles Delomo, CEO of Train Together. How are you, Charles?
I'm doing very well, thanks, Gavin. Likewise, pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you. I'm really looking forward. And Charles is going to be unpacking things from a leader and CEO perspective as to sharing tips and advice. And we're also joined by Nicola Clark, whose actual title is Senior Learning Coordinator. But the more we've sort of delved into this, I've given her a new title completely, and it's the Inclusivity Champion. Nicola, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Yes.
And Nicola as well is with Charles in Train Together as well. So we're exploring this from a provider perspective, is from the leadership, but also operational delivery. Got a really exciting story about how they've done this, particularly in the middle of a pandemic, but also how this has all been onboarded for learners and for staff. So I just really want to explore this. The whole of the area here is around implementing inclusivity, but it's really to see how we can onboard everyone and to be able to make an impactful change to learners. But in the part of that journey, there's leaders in it, there's teams in it, there's individuals as well as learners, then their employers. So there's a lot to be sort of going on here, really. Charles, there's a journey here. So could we talk about the very first stage of the pre-implementation? So in that planning stage, what sort of things were you thinking of to be able to make this sort of, you know, kick off and kick off well?
Yeah, I think there were a couple of things, really. First of all, and I'll come to them each as we go, but team engagement, getting everybody involved in that decision-making process, getting everyone's eyes on it. We are all seeing this from different perspectives. We can all see how it will impact the lives of learners in different ways. And also there's obviously the very practical thing about, you know, business, the business strategy, where you're going as an organization. How do you want to keep on growing? How do you want to keep on meeting the needs of those learners, of your clients as well? So I think there's that structural piece as well, alongside that team engagement piece. For us, actually, we've been aware of Cognosys for a while, but at that time, you know, probably pre-COVID, I'm going to say that. I think that's going to be a new way of talking, isn't it? Now? pre-COVID, it just didn't feel quite like the right time for us. I felt that we'd tried to bring that on board, it would have overwhelmed us, or we didn't really have the grasp of it. So this is January 2020, a couple of people on our team had attended, I believe, a webinar where Cognosys was mentioned. They were, wow, this sounds fantastic. And I said, great, you guys go off and have a meeting with them, chat about it and go and explore it. And they did, they came back. They've got very different views, one much more around functional skills and one about kind of safeguarding and that well-being element. And yeah, they came back and said, this is for us. You know, this sounds like exactly where we want to go. And at the same time, at a executive level, we were talking about bringing and creating our own additional learning support team. I think we've gone through various transitions, but we recognise actually we need a team purely dedicated on learning support to work alongside our trainers to make sure that our learners were holistically considered and supported. So yeah, so to me, that was all underpinned really by hopefully good communication and wanting to make a real impact rather than just bring on a learning system to, you know, not just simply tick a box from an Ofsted point of view, or, you know, yes, there's funding attached. We want to be really super careful with that funding as well. So yeah, we wanted to make sure we were doing that well as a team around this.
And with the communication side of things, obviously it's communicating within the existing business, and it sounds, it's great. So it's gone from those that are on the sort of cold face sort of, you know, delivering with learners of, you know, advised back from a webinar, then it's sort of, you know, fed through and gone back. So it's not that full figure of eight. Mm-hmm. But what else did you do around communication with stakeholders? Because I know you did some interesting things pre sort of launch to talk to different people to make sure this was all going to go on track, if you know what I mean.
Also, at the end of the day, speaking to clients and informing them about where we wanted to support their learners and wanted to support their employees better and getting feedback from those guys was really key. Another thing that we did, just because I thought was just a very sensible approach, was speak to our ESFA lead and just inform them. So they wanted to catch up with, I'm sure all providers got a call at some point early on in the pandemic to say, how are you guys getting on? The ESFA didn't want any surprises popping up on them. And during a few of those conversations where we were just saying, this is how we're doing, this is our approach, this is where we're at, I also said, one thing you will see from us over the next few months is probably an increase in our the ALS that we're claiming, and this is the reason why. You know, we're bringing on board Cognisys. They're all built into our delivery models. We're training our team, so expect to jump there. And we kind of gave them an estimation as well. We estimated that around 30% of our learner population would match on Cognisys. And actually, it's tracking at the moment around 33 to 36%. Nicola probably does have the exact figure, but it's around that figure. So we were pretty accurate there. And by passing that on, it just became a natural part of the dialogue. You know, I probably talk to our lead at the ESFA once a quarter on average, and that will pop up and I will say, this is what we're doing about it, and just keep them appraised. They want to know what's going on. And I'm sure it's one of those questions, but I hadn't raised it, they would have asked the question, hold on a second, this has changed. And I think the problem or the challenge here for us was that we were doing a huge amount of additional learning support before. But supporting the trainers actually recognize what that learning support is, or, you know, and how to support those learners was a bit of a gap. We had a really interesting chat with the team this morning. Only this morning, the way we responded to COVID was a bit over the top at the beginning. We did 30-minute meetings at 9:30 every day. We then tracked it down to about 30 minutes three times a week. And we do a Wednesday morning meeting. That's very operational. So somebody takes the lead on that. And today's was Nicola's lead. And we were talking about feedback from surveys, specifically around Cognisys and additional learning support. And also about the data, what's going on, how many learners are matching and completing. We've got, you know, really fantastic data, really fantastic feedback from the learners. It's about supporting our trainers to actually grab hold of that and actually implement that within their practices as well. I think Paul, within our team, who heads up learning support, said, you know, pretty much the learners that we're supporting, giving additional learning support to, in and over what we do with Cognisys, match on Cognisys. We didn't have that data before, so we weren't able to be proactive. We weren't able to go, oh, this learner who is enrolling here is most likely going to need extra support.
Yeah,
we might have found that out as we went down that journey with them. You see, and I think that's really good. It gets you on the front foot.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's really important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A bit of a different sort of angle on the question. Every organisation, every business is different. But yeah, you're a leader of a provider. From your sort of experience of going through this, from the implementation then to this rolling out, I wonder, Nicola, bring you in a minute actually about sort of the rollout. What tips would you share? Because, yeah, obviously there's lessons to be learned and there's things which could be done. You as a provider, there's different sizes of providers. There's colleges as well. You know, it's just how do you sort of, from your experience, what tips would you want to share for other leaders to sort of think around neurodiversity and inclusivity?
I think it's all around the planning. It's all around building, looking at your current structures that you have within your organisation and making sure that you've considered how Cognisys or providing additional learning support in that way is going to affect the way that you work as an organisation and affect the goals that you set yourself. So for me, it's all in the planning, making sure the structure's in place. Like I said, we've already talked about stakeholder engagement. That was key. And really making sure that we're regularly listening to our team about how they've experienced Cognisys. Because yes, it is absolutely central, ultimately, about the learner experience. But at the same time, we're only going to better that by actually making sure that we get the feedback from the internal team as well. So for me, that's got to be key. I've said today in the team meeting that we're still on the implementation journey. Yes, we've been here for 9 months, but I don't think we really will have finished our implementation our cognitist until we get probably past that 1 year, 12 month marker. And we can reflect back and we can say, yes, actually, this is how we're going to take this to the next level. So recognize that just by simply pressing the button or getting on the phone to cognitist, bringing on system isn't necessarily going to be the only thing you need to do. There's got to be a bit of structure and a bit of good thinking behind it and aligning it to the strategy of the organization. So that's probably my top tip.
Yeah, cool. It's a communication in all of this come through every single one of the stages. So planning and communication seems to be key for your success in this. Louise, can I bring you in? Obviously you work with, yeah, there's been 100,000 plus sort of data sets that you've now got for learners, but obviously there's a lot of providers you've worked with as well. Any tips that you would want to share around small, large colleges, universities, employer providers, you know, that you would want to share around that you've seen have been real successes for people?
I second what Charles has said. This isn't just something that arrives an educator and like, you know, it just works. It has to be a two-way solution. So planning preparation is key, as Charles has said. Implementation is crucial as well. So every provider has a dedicated implementation team and they work really closely. So for the first couple of weeks of an implementation, it's discussions about process. So how can cognitists fit into a provider's existing processes? What needs to change? So, you know, best practice would be to have a Nicola in every institution. You know, no, we promote that to have a cognitive champion or more than one is ideal. Because once everybody's, that's another tip actually, train all staff to understand neurodiversity and be able to recognize a difficulty when they see it and know what to do about it. You know, we want to instill confidence in the sector. We want to instill confidence in our staff as well. It's a collective effort to support our learners. You know, we've mentioned that in every single one of these podcasts as well. It's not just down to one person to do this. It's a collective effort. And we all need to do that. So, yeah, train your staff. Yeah, there's free training available out there now as well. And I suppose internally, share best practice. You know, this is a trial and error process. You know, not everything works first time sometimes. What does work? What doesn't work? We do encourage providers to talk to each other as well, where they have got problems to find solutions, where there's questions, queries. You know, as Charles has said, speak to your SFA. Account manager. That's what they're there for. They're there to support you with things like this. Communication, again, absolutely key.
Yeah, no, that's really, really helpful. Nicola, everyone's been singing your praises and you've not even had a chance to sort of speak yet. As our inclusivity champion, can you sort of share some tips as to how you started off the journey, but particularly around, there's a few sort of parts to this really. Really, how did you get the whole team involved? Because this has been a central theme we've heard all the way through our mini series. Is this isn't this down to one person, and this could have just sat on your shoulders, but you were a part of that role of making sure this was everyone involved. How did you onboard all of the team?
I'm a great believer in positive engagement, and I think this was key to that. Implementing of cognitists both with the learners and the tutors, just to show that because somebody needs a little bit of extra support, it's not a bad thing, and cognitists actually provide this in a really positive way and can support both the learner and the tutor. So it's introducing the tutors to the learners that were engaged and showing them the start of the journey, which is completing the initial assessment. And by communicating to the learners and the tutors that actually it was a good thing by matching on cognitists, because it would provide the learner with the support they needed to feel confident in what they're doing. Because quite often a learner that has matched with cognitists has a dip in confidence because perhaps at school they were struggling, and it's about making the learner feel positive reinforcing it with the tutors, how Cognisys has worked to provide that support. And then we manage that and record what strategies have been completed and how it's affected. It's given, there's four sort of categories: impact, issue, and next steps. I've forgotten one there, but I'm sure Louise will tell me which one it is. But it's about including everybody in the journey to make everybody feel confident that actually they're getting the support that they really do need. It's targeted to the areas which Cognisys identifies through the initial assessment. And the difference on the survey, the confidence levels of our learners from the survey results show that not just in their apprenticeship, but in their work and life, they feel more confident. You know, it's just there. 82% are saying it's improved their studying, and 69% have said it's improved their work-life balance as well. So it's a massive step in the right direction to support learners that sometimes really do struggle and then just drop out.
Yeah, very, very much. And it's all around the inclusivity part as well, isn't it? You know, around you're communicating back to learners and into the team again. So that's fantastic that you're seeing that. And to see that impact, 82% and 69%, did you say? That's fantastic, isn't it? This, we sometimes forget that this is not just about a qualification. It's then enabling people who may have had all these barriers in the way and all of this lack of confidence to then just go on and just continually learn, isn't it? And to continually grow. And I think that's just really, really important. Nicola, what practical things would you say would be a good idea? Or Charles, maybe you can step in on this as well, around enabling the team to have that additional time to adapt to the learner's needs. Because sometimes, you know, that could be a little bit daunting. Like, oh no, I've got to adapt to sort of fit this learner's sort of this need or to overcome this barrier. But also evidencing, because it's really, really important to be able to have evidence for a number of reasons. One of them is to be able to, you know, to justify the funding. The other is to be able to show that learner journey, isn't it, around where they've gone from. So I mean, surveying, Nicola, is obviously one of the things you've been doing really well. But yeah, what practical tips, Nicola and Charles, could you maybe suggest is ways to be able to bring the team on to be able to actually deliver?
Yeah, from our point of view, I mean, Nicola joined our team specifically to champion Cognisys, to champion. So we and we had brought on Cognisys probably about 3-4 weeks in advance. But Nicola already came on board with, you know, working and supporting us bring on board our current learners who had, I think we decided that learners who had at least 6 months or more on program that were going to go forward and go through Cognisys. And that's tricky because those learners have already gone on course and always you're asking them to do something else. And you know, so I think that, you know, initially Nicola also had that challenge there. I think the way that we've worked with the trainers, going back to your question, Gavin, I think it's been, that's what I'm saying, it's the implementation is not something that just happens overnight. It's something that we need that continual feedback on. So the trainers are completing feedback on the learners and how the learners are experiencing Cognisys within the Cognisys system, but they're also then linking that back to the e-portfolio, and we're also encouraging our learners to journal about it as well within the e-portfolio. We use OneFile, for example. And one thing we want to be doing and continue to do is to encourage best practice by, you know, we were talking earlier about one of our trainers who really is fantastic, early on in the month, completing those notes as part of the natural review process. It's not separate to where some of our trainers are on that journey, I think is the best way to say. You know, they're finding their feet with it. That's just, so you can't also expect that from day one everyone is going to respond in the same way. You can share best practice and you can promote and highlight where things are going well and how to save time, but actually it is something that you are going to continue to work on and fine tune over that month, over it as each month goes by. But one thing Nicola does on a Monday morning, a part of my brief to everybody, has like a 5-minute slot to share with everyone how we're doing, getting feedback from everyone on a weekly basis. So having, not leaving it a month, but having a regular touch points with everybody. And of course, Nicola's on the phone to trainers, reaching out, saying, how can I support you? How can I assist you? And that's been really positive as well. So I suppose for me, like I said, it's not really something that all of a sudden we had a structure and it ticked straight away. It's, yeah, we got it embedded, it was fantastic, and it made a difference. But actually, it's that fine-tuning on a monthly basis, which has really made the difference.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I suppose it's like the same with learners. We're always asking learners to, you know, submit and regularly update their portfolio. And it's the same again for the educators. They need to be doing the same about the learners. It's sort of that circle of eight. I'm into my circle of eights today. Nicola, could we talk about the process? Because obviously you had existing learners, and there must have been some within there that have got had a hidden neurodiversity when they went through assessment. And then you got your new learners that have gone through initial assessment straight away. So how's that sort of been different for those that were existing learners, you know, pre your sort of coming on board? And how did you onboard those, and what was the change? And then for the new people that have joined, how's that different, and what lessons could be learned in sort of taking that forward?
Yeah, when I initially started, I looked at the legacy learners to see how they'd engaged with the Cognis initial assessment. And basically, it was about contacting them, asking them to complete it, so we could just give them that extra bit of support that they might have needed. It was telling them or explaining to them how Cognis really could help them. So it was a new thing for them to do, which, you know, we took on board. And some learners were straight on it, and others took a little more time. But it was about engaging them and actually explaining it wasn't a bad thing. It's a good thing to have this Cognis match. But we came up with a strategy for all new learners that we do it day one as part of their journey. So actually it's there embedded from the very start. And it gives us the heads up on the learners that need that extra support. And we sell it to them in a way that it will help and improve their confidence, not just like in the apprenticeship, but in all areas, and how much Cognis can just give them little tips, bite-sized chunks of information. It's nothing too heavy that will actually make them feel empowered to be able to do different things. So it's making the learners' confidence increase from day one, really.
Yeah, no, definitely. Louise, is there any tips which you could share from all of the different providers you've worked with around onboarding teams in particular? And so it isn't just like a leader perspective, or, you know, it's like we said all the way through these podcasts, basically, it's everyone's sort of role here to be able to make impactful changes. It's that sort of thing, that whole analogy about a village, you know, sort of bringing up a child, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, how can we sort of learn from that? What sort of tips could you sort of share for other people? Because there's large providers going to listen to this, really small providers. How do we sort of, you know, take this forward?
I think everybody needs to be involved, you know, even at a light touch perspective. So, you know, the best practice examples I've seen are where, you know, like with Train Together, where Charles knows exactly what's going on, you know, maybe not on a day-to-day basis, but we wouldn't expect that. But you know what Cognis is, you know what it does, you know how it needs to be implemented within the company. And, you know, you have updates every week on it. You know, that's perfect best practice. We do invite everybody to our training. You know, it's not just about, you know, the mechanics of delivering the support or using a platform. It's also like the wider view of neurodiversity, what it means to be neurodiverse, how we all think and learn differently. You know, Gavin, you know, I know you found it really useful to view your own brain profile. It's useful for everybody to have this information. When we talk about support, it's not just tutor to learner. You know, it's colleague to colleague. It could be like manager to employee as well. To make this successful, this needs to be part of the bloodline of a company or a business. You know, bring it into your one-to-ones with your staff. You know, okay, let's have a look at your brain profile. How can I, as a manager, communicate better with you as a result of your brain profile? I'd say as well, keep refreshing that information, you know, encourage that communication. As Nicola does, you know, every week, here are the stats. Here's the learner, the recent learner survey. This is what our learners are saying. So, you know, keep that interest fueled within the business. This shouldn't be an add-on or a tick box exercise or an afterthought. Mm-hmm. You know, this needs to be part of the quality of the business.
Yeah. So I was going to come in there. I couldn't agree more with Louise. It's one thing that we've tasked all our team to do by the spring is to complete the masterclass, the masterclasses, and so it's the NCFE back training with Cognosist. And we've actually tasked all of our leaders. We have quite a flat structure in Train Together, quite a broad leadership team, which also helps in terms of communication, and I think really helped during the pandemic. But we wanted all of, particularly those leaders, to have completed those by the end of March. Once again, because we want obviously our leaders to be leading, and actually encouraging, inspiring, all of the team to move forward with Cognosist and see how it's really supporting. I think as well, the other thing that has supported us to change is the language and the thinking within Train Together about neurodiversity issues. And I think it's encouraged everyone to start really thinking, opening their mind and start asking good questions about what does this really mean to learning? How do we really differentiate learning? How do we change our delivery models? What does it, what does it mean to truly develop and deliver learning, which is actually really inclusive? So it supports us with our equality, diversity, inclusion piece, our safeguarding piece. We've aligned it. We brought on board a new safeguarding piece of software called My Concern. And what we do is all of our learners who match within Cognosist are put, they have a profile set up in My Concern, just because we are aware that those learners that do match in Cognosist are more likely to be vulnerable and more likely to have other safeguarding issues. So once again, it's seeing that this is, and that has developed the language of safeguarding within the organisation, EDI. So I think for us, it's a part of a bigger piece that is actually, and probably took us on a journey that we weren't fully anticipating, but we've responded and proactively taken steps to move towards.
Yeah, no, that's great. Like, and it is so essential. It's brilliant that you've gone through this like holistic approach to it, Charles. And yeah, it's testament to you that you've led the team to do that. How can we sort of share tips with people that it isn't just an initial early adopters and people get excited about it to begin with, but how do we continue to then deliver this long term so it becomes part of the DNA of around supporting, it's around inclusive, supporting neurodiverse learners. But as you said, Charles, looking at EDI, looking at safeguarding, how can we then sort of roll this forward so as everyone is involved in that whole holistic look at the learner?
I've got a thought on that, and it's only because it's what we're doing at the moment. And it's, I recently attended some training on key account management. Just because, I feel it's something that, well, doesn't matter who you are, you can always improve in this area. And it just really dawned on me, sometimes when you invest in systems, you invest in new things, you often internalize it first and you think, how is this going to change what we're doing? And I think that's the wrong question. And so how is it actually going to change our learners' experience and our employers' experience? So for me, that long-term piece is about linking it back to, your vision, your values, your culture, but also if we're going to tie it to something that feels a bit more tangible, the key account management plans that you have in place. Where do you want to see your organization in 5-10 years time? What do you want people to be saying about your organization? And actually recognizing the fact that if you're good at recognizing how to give people the right support and making sure that your team are well trained, well versed, really understand it at a deep level, have a personal story behind it, then of course that's going to just make that key account management piece much more strong. So I think it's got to be linked to those, your culture, your values. It's also got to be linked to things like your key account management, your business development teams. Our BD team are really excited about Cognosist because actually it really helps them promote what we do. It's a different conversation and employers are interested. This is on the tip of the tongues with everybody that we're speaking to on the phone. Partly maybe that's the sectors that we work in, but I think people are aware that as an organization, they maybe aren't as diverse, they aren't as inclusive, they would like to see things see more equality. And I think that's on the tip of the tongue of all employers. And so by having these conversations, we're deepening our relationship with our customers at the same time. We're on the same page. So for me, I think that's it. I think it's if you want to see it, the long-term piece, you've got to link it to that long-term strategy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we've just gone through one of the strangest times in history with COVID, haven't we? And it's changed the way that delivery is happening, but also it's changed people's mindsets. You know, we're over a year of lockdowns and all the rest of it. And the way we're then going to be coming out of that is then going to change, isn't it? And I really do think the further education, skills and employability sector is really truly got this opportunity to be the vaccine for the long COVID effects on the economy. And it's just how we then deliver that. And it's deliver that for individuals. And like you're saying, Charles, we've got such an opportunity to long-term have relationships which positively affect learners, but also employers. And it's this how, if we deliver well, then it's going to be a great time for the sector in what has been such a rubbish time for the whole nation, you know. Nicola, is there some things which you can see where the pandemic has changed delivery and the teams? And as we're then coming back to change the way that's going to be delivered, probably much more around hybrid learning and then when it's in person for different, you know, competencies and different skill areas. What's interesting about Train Together is that you've got many different competencies that you work within. How do you see the pandemic in this next stage? Hopefully when we're coming out of it a bit more, is to how that could change delivery. And what does that mean for learners? What does that mean for employers? What does that mean for the team?
The good thing about Cognosys is it's delivered to learners on a monthly basis. There are set strategies from the first of each month. So there is engagement straight away. But how we follow it up with the tutors, with reviews and things, we're doing it via Teams and things like that. But this, in the future, could be done at a tripartite meeting with both the learner, the employer, the tutor, and myself. It's about utilising Cognosys in the best way to ensure that learners are actually, you know, reaching their potential and not letting them fall behind. So Cognosys will be out there delivering or sending the new strategies out every month, but it's making sure that the learners are in a good place to actually complete those strategies and then discuss them with their tutors. So when we are able to go out and have face-to-face meetings with the tutors and trainers and employers, it just connects it all up. It's a 360 approach. I mean, we are doing it via Teams at the moment, but it is always nice to have that face-to-face meeting. So it's not something we do every month with every learner, but, you know, sometimes people have things that happen in their lives and they're struggling, and it's really good to be able to reach out to them and say, you know, is there some other areas? Cognosys has a very good strategy on stress management and things like that that we can implement as an extra. But it's about communicating between all parties to make sure that everyone feels comfortable with, you know, what's happening in the world, which is really difficult at the moment. But hopefully one day soon we'll be back to how we used to deliver. So yeah, it's about that complete circle, really, and making sure that people feel happy with what they're doing, that, you know, it is helping them and giving them that support they need.
So can we talk about adult learners? Because one of the things that we had in the whole COVID crisis has been, you know, we've had recent ONS figures showing, as the dates go on, raising unemployment figures for both young and more adult learners, joke employers. That's been propped up a lot by furlough. As furlough starts to come to a close, some industries may open, others may not and be affected. There's going to be a lot of people, this COVID term of pivoting. We've got schemes that are Kickstart for young people. Restart is going to be coming on stream for adult learners, which then would naturally, hopefully, mean that people would then be able to either step into roles straight away or probably more likely go into apprenticeships as well. There's going to be a lot of adult learners who may have had a really quite a bad experience at school with a hidden neurodiversity. Any tips about to help those adult learners, or to help staff help those adult learners, where, because there could be some quite a lot of baggage over the years of you know, of having different, you know, sort of feelings around what their neurodiversity was. It could be some relief, there could be some anger, you know, like how can you support adult learners who are then re-coming back into education to stack those skills, to, you know, to bridge, to pivot? There's got to be a learning process here. How can we help adult learners which are coming back into the education cycle?
Yeah, I think from my point of view, it has to start first of all with supporting employers to become more aware of neurodiversity issues, and to become trained. You know, there's no reason why our employers can't be doing the training with Cognosys. We send them content about Cognosys. There's a really great articles that I know Cognosys have created, and sharing information about that with our, not just our lead contacts, but you know, at the mentor and line manager level as well, so they become more of a, well, and I think ultimately as a nation we've probably got to all to become good at mentoring and good at showcasing those skills. And part of what makes you a good mentor is obviously recognizing yourself as a professional mentor and having the skill sets, those secondary skill sets, alongside being a mentor, being a teacher, being a trainer, but ultimately able to differentiate what you're doing, able to communicate in different ways. We all know about kinesthetic, et cetera, but I think as well, that's also got to be understood at a neurodiversity level. So that's layered upon that as well. So I think it has to start with the employer. It has to start with recognizing employers have a great deal to work with here. They have to be the mentors of the future. Ultimately, as apprenticeship providers, we're not there every day with our learners. And so our mentors are apt and our line manager are critical for that truly to be embedded in that, to actually have an impact within the workplace and for that individual to be fully supported.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. We talked about employers and danced around the topic a bit, really. But any tips that Louise, Nicola, around, say there was an undiagnosed neurodiversity, the learner, if they're an apprenticeship learner, is obviously they're employed, they're in a, you know, full-time, you know, work. What's then the sort of situation around it? Because we've covered this on a lot of podcasts, haven't we, Louise, around this. Sometimes learners, and I can understand why, are frightened to sort of tell their employers that they've got a neurodiversity or a barrier. But there's going to be times when they just didn't know, you know. And what's the way forward, particularly with employers, that we can, A, remove any stigma? And I think that's going away more and more as time goes on. But how can we help the employer as well as the learner in sort of this neurodiversity journey with individuals, but overall?
Yeah, good question. I agree with Charles. Get them involved. Send them information, send them articles. I think on a detailed learner level, though, if the learner is keen to disclose, then I would recommend a tripartite meeting. So, for example, inclusivity champion, employer, and learner. And then use the assessment report as a framework for that conversation. So the assessment report has the resulting brain profile, and then it has advice. So, yeah, there's really easy advice that can be implemented on a practical level by anybody who sees that report. I think what's really important for the employer as well is to see, like, what are the benefits? What does it mean for me as an employer? Okay, I can support that person. I can do things differently for them. But why? What's in it for me? And I think ultimately, you know, what we're seeing now is progression, which is fantastic. We're seeing timely completion. We're seeing attainment improve, particularly for LDD learners. But also confidence. You know, we're building independent, confident people who are becoming more resilient. They can adapt to different situations that they're put in. And ultimately, we're not leaving any learner behind as a collective. So employers are very much part of this journey. It just needs to be communicated appropriately, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. Nicola, you've had some really cool stats out of your survey. Is there any sort of impact that you can see from that, from an employer's perspective around the way this is sort of this journey for the learner, but also for the employer is made a positive, impactful change?
Employers feel that they're included more as part of the apprenticeship by knowing their staff better and having a better understanding of something that probably the learner didn't know about. And it's one of the discussions that I try to have early on when the learner has completed their initial assessment is, was the part of the assessment that actually you found difficult? Because quite often that is the part that really is where they're matching. So they have a feeling, but they've never quite understood why. So it's all about taking the time to explain that actually it's how their brain works, and we're all individuals. We do have spiky profiles, and it's about saying there's nothing wrong in that. You know, we are different and we learn in different ways. So it's how we support it, how we include the employer on the journey as well, because they might be a new member of staff. And quite often they want to then know how best they can support the staff. So it's about including everybody in that first tripartite meeting and saying that we're there to support them and help them through their journey.
Yeah, that's really cool. Charles, is there, from your experience, it seems like there would then be a training need to be able to, you know, help staff who may not be used to, you know, onboarding not just the learner, but also the employer, as to explaining, again, it's another communication, you know, sort of thing here, really, isn't it? Around communicating to the employer what's happening, what's been seen, but what's the benefits, you know, and what's the sort of way forward. How have you sort of gone about that? Or what tips would you want to share to better help other leaders think about how to support their staff in this? Because this sort of goes a little bit beyond what most educators would think, because this is me doing education, this me also then supporting an employer, but it is part of the role, you know. So how can we support, you know, educators to step into that sort of other side of their role, which is all around support and communication?
Yeah, it has to be about it's time and training. It's there's no quick fix. I think nice Kobe quote is, you know, with people slow is fast and fast is slow. And that's really true. It's putting in the right internal CPD, putting in some professional CPD as well. Nicely timed in. I think people can absorb that all in one go. You have to have that well scheduled. You've got to review it. You want your line managers to be connecting in with your trainers and talking about it, obviously being influencers and inspirers and really championing it alongside Nicola. So it can't just be Nicola the only champion in the organisation. It has to be those that have those leadership roles. And it's about then, yeah, ensuring people have got the time in order to actually implement this practice as well, and practice it. You know, there's nothing better than practice. And we certainly weren't expecting our trainers to become overnight gurus when it came to Cognosist and neurodiversity, but actually also being very open with their learners and also the employers, our clients, saying, this is a journey we're on. This is what I've learned. There's no better thing you can do than pass on the learning you've just learned to other people to embed it. So, you know, we don't put ourselves out there as neurodiversity experts. I suppose we're putting ourselves as people on a journey to really deeply understand it so that it ultimately can prove what we do to support our learners. And so that, you know, in a year's time, I think the language that you'll hear from our trainers, the confidence that they have, the knowledge that they have will be even greater than it is now. Because it's not just we've got to that stage, right, we can sit back and relax now. And that's something it's now fully embedded in what we do. So, you know, where we'll be in a year's time, 2 years' time, is going to be in a very different place.
Yeah, no, definitely. Everyone, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out today. I think one thing which has really, really come out over and over and over again is for implementing inclusivity, particularly around neurodiversity, but also around EDI, around just supporting learners, supporting employers, supporting staff. It's communication. It just seems to be the one key thing that come out. And I think from a leadership perspective, Charles, it seems that you've got a very agile approach, and I would say that, you know, you've got your product manager, you're doing regular meetings, everything you're saying just sounds like agile to me, and it seems, you know, very, very interesting and to deliver that within an organisation perspective. But it's all around here, isn't it? Making impact to learners, helping employers, and just be able to help people just become the very best that they can be, isn't it? And I think at the end of the day, all the different ways that we can support that is going to be key. Louise, thank you for joining me on this journey all the way through here. I think this is the start. I think there's so many more things that we can help with just trying to share best practice. Charles, thank you for sharing from a leadership perspective. Nicola, I think, honestly, Charles, you need to change your name to just being champion, really, because it's just this whole ability around being an inclusivity champion. But that key to be able to then also just not let it sit on your shoulders, not be Teflon syndrome with this, like, it's someone else's problem, but including and involving everyone is great. And it'd be wonderful to see maybe in a couple of years' time as to what impact this has made for learners, what this has meant for employers. Charles, also from a key account management perspective as well, what's it meant for retaining employers, retaining those learners from maybe a level 3 to a level 4, 5, 6 and beyond? You know, what could that mean? Everyone, thank you for joining us. This is a co-produced Effie News and Cognosys podcast mini-series called Exploring Neurodiversity. Today was Implementing Inclusivity, and I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoy the other 3 episodes to this 4-part mini-series. We'll speak to you soon. Thank you for joining me and Louise for the latest edition of Exploring Neurodiversity. This is actually one of a 4-part mini-series. All of the episodes together are Myth Busting, Steps to Outstanding, Funding Fears, and Implementing Inclusivity. So me and Louise will hopefully speak to you soon.